Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And Ellen Brown is back today. I hope you all tuned in yesterday. You know who Ellen is. She's a civil litigation attorney. She's an author. My goodness, a prolific author. And the book that was a stunner for me that is absolute must reading is her book, Web of Death. And it really discusses the Federal Reserve private banking cartel and how they usurp money creation power, what we need to do to get it back, and so much more in this colossal piece of work. Get the book and read it. You'll never forget it. Yesterday we talked briefly about some of the events going on now, the possibility that there's a very sinister plot afoot. I call it a stealth scheme to usurp global monetary control. Obama's so-called financial reform proposal, the audacity to want to give more power to the Federal Reserve, again, a private banking cartel. My God, we need to strip it of all its power. Ellen prefers the idea of nationalizing the Fed. Well, I'll go along with that. I think my purpose is just get rid of the bloody thing and let me come up with a new name. I think that might be a better idea. Nationalize it, but let's come up with a new name. Just the sound Federal Reserve, which, of course, is not federal. Well, there's just ugly stuff going on. And what bothers me as I look at the whole Obama administration agenda, whether we're talking about health care reform, or handing trillions of dollars to bankers and wrecking the economy as a result of that. And then the idea of financial reform, which is exactly the opposite of reform. Reform is really deform. It's got nothing to do with reform. It's consolidating power. And apparently they want to do it on a global scale. Well, that's no surprise. We want to talk about health issues today, things that we can do, because Ellen has written so much about it, and things that we can do to keep ourselves healthy and things to stay away from to be sure that what may be going on, and we haven't seen it unleashed yet, but we want to talk about an article that was sent to me overnight. And if it's almost true, it's very, very scary stuff. So we want to get into that. Ellen, welcome to the program. I've hogged the first few minutes of the program.
Oh, thanks, Stephen. No, I enjoy listening to you.
Oh, well, we do need to talk about that. We'll get the music striking up in a moment. I guess you read the article that I sent you a link on. It's on naturalnews.com. It's written by the natural health editor, a woman by the name of Barbara Minton, and her title is enough to grab anybody's attention. Journalist files charges against WHO, World Health Organization, and UN for bioterrorism and intent to commit mass murder. What do you think of that article, Ellen?
Well, your first impression is that it's over the edge, but the more you read it, I mean, I totally believe that there is a certain element that believes that we have to eliminate two-thirds of the world's population in order to for the other third to survive, and that, of course, they would be the elite third. But whether they could actually pull that off or whether they've gotten to that high level is another question.
Oh, yeah, we need to take a break. It is really shocking to think of how massive this might be if it's true. This has been done before on a very, very small scale, localized or regionalized.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Ellen Brown, talking about this article about suing the WHO, the UN on bioterrorism charges, culling the world population. Ellen, it certainly is an idea that the elitists talk about, and so-called useless eaters, And, you know, why let them use up world resources when the elitists want to have them for themselves to sell and make a profit on?
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have plenty of resources to feed the whole world if we were to convert over to more efficient uses of our resources. In other words, if we use alternative energy. I mean, we need to develop all those sources, but that potential is there. And again, it has to do with funding. If we had the money and if we didn't have to pay 50% of the cost of everything is now interest on average. So if you could eliminate the cost of interest, for instance, with a public credit system, you could afford to develop all these alternatives that now we think are too expensive and that aren't sustainable or aren't cost-effective. They would be cost-effective without the usury charges that all this profits that's going off the top.
Exactly. Of course, we've structured our system, Ellen, to see to it that the powerful financial interests, the powerful banking interests have structured the system the way they want it. So they charge us this tax that's unnecessary, and we pay this enormous. 50% is really that high?
On average. Well, for some things, it's higher than that. Like for housing, it's something like 70%. But there was a woman in Germany who figured out all these statistics. But she said, on average, the cost of everything we buy is half of it is interest. Because you have interest at every level. All the producers have to pay interest on the money they borrow in order to produce the thing, in order to get the profits to pay back their loans. That's how all businesses operate and why this credit crunch is so serious, because businesses have to have credit just to pay their workers in order to produce the things to make the profits to pay back the loans. That's the way the system works. So you could fix all that with a public credit system where when you acknowledge that all money is merely credit, if you allowed, well, the island state of Guernsey did this and Hitler did it, where you're basically paying your workers with IOUs that are then spent in the economy. I mean, the IOUs are money. And then when the thing that the workers made produces profits, then you pay off the IOUs with those profits. So it's not inflationary. It's just a question of where the credit originates. Do you feel that you have to borrow money from somebody else who has it, or some pile of some precious metal that's dug out of the ground, or can you just create the credit as essentially paying the workers and materials out of the future profits, which is just a mathematical accounting system thing? And that's really what our entire banking system is right now. And so that's what I keep trying to fan the flame so people can understand that what we have here is not what we think. And when you realize what it really is, then you can see that the solution is obvious. That's a good point when you said the Federal Reserve should be renamed, because originally the reserve, the word reserve had some sense, made some sense because we were talking about gold reserves, but now we're not on a gold system. The only reserves are government debt, which is more credit. In other words, there are no reserves. It's just credit on top of credit. So what we really need, but I think we do need some sort of central or public institution. So you might call it the public credit, the public central bank or whatever.
You know, in your state of California, Ellen, your governor, because of the dire economic state, has talked about the possible need to, instead of using funds that they're fast running out of, the idea of issuing IOUs. Is this the closest thing that if they do it? Would this be the closest thing they could do short of having a state-chartered bank?
Well, so a state-chartered bank is really the same thing, but instead of calling it IOUs, you can issue money. That's what a bank does. It issues money, which is really just an IOU. The bank is essentially saying, we don't really have the money, but we're going to pretend that we have the money, and you can draw on this account, and then the borrower will pay us back, and we'll balance our accounts. So if you have a bank, you're allowed to use Federal Reserve notes, and you can issue dollars instead of calling it an IOU, which is not so easy to trade in the economy. If you're the worker, what are you going to do with that IOU? Do people really know what that is and what it's worth? So that's why it makes more sense for the state to just own its own bank and generate many times more, leverage its resources and generate many times more loans or credit than it actually has.
Well, you've written about this, and you explained the simple solution that you just talked about in a couple of articles. But, of course, your governor has not talked about opening a state-chartered bank.
No, nobody. It's amazing that nobody seems to pick up on this idea that's in, you know, nobody in high places.
They have to know about it. They know they could solve their problem. And, of course, Obama has just thumbed his nose against California. It's incredible that a state like California, that where would it rank in the world among countries if it had its own GDP? It would rank pretty
high.
Number
eight, I think, yeah.
Number eight in the world? I mean, it is absolutely incredible that the federal government would literally light a match and throw away trillions of dollars, which is the way I think about handing it to the Wall Street bankers that caused the problem we're in. And here, the state of California, do they just want to slice it off and dump it into the ocean? I mean, how could they do it? The only rationale behind this, Ellen, is that they literally, to me, this is proof. This is more proof that they want to wreck the economy for a greater goal that they have, throw everybody in crisis,
mm-hmm.
and then come up with their miracle solutions, which might be like a bioterror drug that they want to inject into our veins, claiming it will protect us against an illness that doesn't exist unless they create it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a lot of evidence of bioengineered viruses.
Oh, is there ever? Well,
yeah.
I wrote about bioterrorism. Oh, it's over a year ago now, and I don't have the article in front of me. There are lots of examples of engineered bioterrorism. I mean, I just listed a whole menu of them. Small stuff, though. Nothing on the order of what Jane Burgermeister, who has filed this suit against WHO and UN on bioterrorism and intent to commit mass murder. Nothing on that order.
Well, there's good evidence that AIDS was actually created in that way, that it was there was an experiment done on with hepatitis vaccine on gay men. They were volunteers for this experiment, and they that was the first outbreak of AIDS in the U.S., and the vaccine came from, I mean, they say it came from monkeys in Africa, but it actually... It's in the vaccine that all those Africans get for smallpox. Anyway, I read that long ago, so I'm not saying it very well. But
it makes sense, Ellen. It absolutely makes sense. I mean, it was a disease that literally seemed to come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It never existed before. Nobody ever heard of it. Well, they had to give whatever this thing was a name, so they named it HIV/AIDS, and. It's logical to wonder, you know, let's take a look at this thing and analyze it and figure out exactly what it is and how did it erupt. But nobody does. Maybe there has been some stuff done on this, but I'm not aware of it.
Well, there are books on it, but that's the thing. They don't make the mainstream. They're all suppressed. And that's the frightening thing about a medical plan that we all have to subscribe to. I said there was an article in the Huffington Post yesterday. I had an article on the front page of myself, so I was looking at the other articles, and one of them was about freedom of choice in healthcare. And his idea of freedom of choice was that you get to have more than one insurance company to choose from. But it totally suppressed is this idea that maybe we don't want this health system at all. That the entire concept of our medical system is wrong. The idea that disease is an invader from outside and that we have to fight it with toxic drugs and chemicals or suppress what the body is trying to do, suppress the symptoms. That's what all drugs do, is suppress symptoms. And by definition, a drug can't be a natural thing, or at least it couldn't until recently. I guess they've actually managed to patent some natural things now. But supp- supposedly a drug is something intended to alter the structure or function of the human body. Well, if you're altering the structure and function of the human body, you're altering what the body itself is trying to do. So you're suppressing the natural thing. For instance, aspirin suppresses fever. So maybe you feel a little better because you're not so hot. But fever is the way that you cook out germs. So there, apparently, in that article that you sent, the Spanish flu of 1918, there was some evidence that it was actually caused by the heavy use of aspirin, or not caused, but, you know, fanned by this heavy use of aspirin, which suppressed the fever process, which is the body's natural way of cooking out germs. So that's what I would say the solutions are, is detox. The solution is to get that junk out and not to be putting more toxic things in. So heat is the best way for the body to get rid of toxins is to sweat.
Let's talk more about this when we come back. By the way, I made some phone calls this morning before coming on the program with you, Ellen, trying to reach Jane Burgermeister through publications she's written for. I just got an email from her, and she says she'd be happy to come on the radio program. So after we get done, I will email her back, and I'll see if I can arrange to bring her on a future program.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Ellen Brown. How about that, Ellen? I just made a couple of phone calls this morning thinking, well, I'll give it a shot, but it's a long shot. And bingo, 5 minutes ago, an email popped up, and that was lovely. She obviously, Jane Burgermeister, obviously has done a lot of work on this. You saw her in the article I sent you. I think it was a 69-page indictment or whatever it is, a document that she put together. And I'm going to ask her if she'll send me the entire thing. I honestly would like to write about this, but here Natural News has done it. If I can get some additional material, then I'll follow up with what was done in Natural News and put out some more information about this.
Mm-hmm. Bill Engdahl and I are actually writing a book on this, so I just
on this very topic.
Wrote that to him. Yeah, I had already written something with about 10 years ago on the fact that the whole germ theory of disease is wrong. And there's very good evidence for that. And so I presented all the evidence. So I had about 100 pages already written. And then Bill has done all this work on vaccines and, just the very subject of this article. So I forwarded the article to him, but we'll definitely incorporate that as well.
Do you have a title for the book?
No.
Not yet. a work in progress. Any idea when you plan to get it out?
Well, my part's done, so, and someone else, I forgot my last name, but White, Margo White is integrating it, so she's a taught in medical school by medical ethics and has quite a bit of experience with drug studies, and she's seen how corrupt they are, that they're totally bought and paid for. You can make a study come out however you want.
Without any question, Ellen, and we certainly have another topic to bring you back. If you and Bill co-authored this, then my goodness, to get you both back on the same program, what a winner that will be. we'll have to see if we can expand it. Well, that would have to be a two-hour session on successive days. But, I'm salivating just waiting for that book to come out. Talk more about the benefits of natural healing and natural health as opposed to the toxic treatments, drugs, chemotherapy, this kind of stuff that they feed us, and they feed it to us, of course, because they make so much money on it.
Well, Pasteur, on his deathbed, admitted that he was wrong, and I can't remember the name of the doctor. I wrote that 10 years ago, but anyway, and this other doctor, Pasteur, said that disease was caused by germs, And this other doctor said, no, it was the terrain. In other words, it's you could take in all the germs, of course, exist, but you could take in all those germs and you would not get sick if you had a healthy terrain. If, in other words, the environment around the germ was the important thing. So that doctor drank a vial of, I'm sorry, I just can't remember the details, but of a very toxic virus, and he didn't get sick because he was just generally healthy. So the whole theory is that if you keep your body healthy, but, you know, you get plenty of oxygen and all the things that produce oxygen in your system and greens and everything you need, that you can easily fight off these germs. I think the best remedy for any form of virus, bacteria, et cetera, is colloidal silver. I almost hesitate to say that because I wrote a book on Jimmy Keller, who was a cancer therapist in Tijuana, and he was quite well known and popular. And he said he was reluctant to tell anyone what he used because as soon as he made that known, the thing would go out, he couldn't get it anymore. They would make it unavailable. Well, he was in Tijuana, so you should be able to get everything, but they just would manage to get it off the market. So he thought somebody was tracking what he was saying. So I hate to say that, but it does work remarkably well. I haven't had a cold in 6 years ever since I started using colloidal silver. It's a good, you know, there are different products and some are better than others, but this one's particularly good and it comes from Europe.
How do you buy it?
Sorry?
How do you buy it, Ellen?
It's just on the internet. The brand is Envision. I'm not trying to sell any products, but that's the one I like.
Can you buy it over the counter in a drugstore?
I don't know. I always just order it off the internet. It comes through Florida, I think. I'm sure you can, but I don't know how good the products are. That's the thing. Some colloidal, if it's not held in suspension right, it can settle out, and that's considered not good. You know, it's a heavy metal, so it can build up in your body. So that's why you want the good suspensions that don't settle out. And I only take it if I feel like I'm coming down with something, which is like once every 2 months or something. So, I mean, I hardly ever even take it. But it just always works. It even works for my mother, who's turning 90 in a month, and she hasn't been sick for a couple of years. It's remarkable for an older woman.
You know, it's amazing, Ellen. Indigenous people for thousands of years never had these drugs that they feed us, and their natural remedies, herbs, whatever that they developed. And I believe the drug companies, in some cases, use things like this. I'm not a medical person, so I don't know exactly. I don't know the procedures they go through, but they use some of these herbal remedies to concoct the toxic drugs. But I think indigenous people did just fine before the world of vaccinations and drugs and the rest.
And I guess I can't talk. I hear the music.
Oh, the music is going. Let's take another break, and then we'll come back, and you can pick it right up, and. Again, talk about the difference between the good way and the bad way.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Ellen Brown. Talking about natural versus toxic ways to either natural ways to keep us healthy or toxic so-called remedies that we absolutely need to stay away from. Ellen, from their point of view, if they're possibly coming up with bioengineering toxic drugs and vaccines, from their point of view, it's probably a great idea. They could cull the world of a lot of useless eaters. The drug companies will make billions of dollars, and at the same time, they'll distract us from the economic chaos going on because everybody's worried about just staying alive and staying healthy and not worrying about how their wealth is being extracted from them. Sounds like a terrific idea.
Mm-hmm. In this article, it says, these people have created or allowed provisions to remain in place that make it a criminal act to refuse to take an injection against pandemic viruses. That is scary. I mean, that is the way that they will create a pandemic, is if we all get these injections. You know, the reason Bill Engdahl is particularly interested in all this, his father gave him his father was an MD, and with the best will in the world, of course, gave him a polio vaccine at the age of five, and he's in a wheelchair, been in a wheelchair ever since.
So he's been afflicted with polio?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's the vaccines that that create these pandemics. That's the only way you're really going to create a pandemic, is if everybody takes those toxic viruses into their bodies. And most, even though it is the terrain that keeps you healthy, most people don't have a healthy terrain, and therefore those viruses will take hold.
This is scary, Ellen. The last vaccination I took was in the early 1960s, about 45 years ago. The polio vaccine. Now nothing has affected me so far. Am I free and clear?
Yeah, I got it too in my youth, so it obviously doesn't hit everybody. But now they're giving these vaccines to infants as soon as they pop out of the womb, when their immune systems are not strong yet. They're not fully developed. The theory is, you know, that they're so vulnerable that you got to give them all these vaccines so they won't pick up germs of some sort. But you're giving them the germs before they have the immune system to fight them. And I saw this horrible case of a baby that was given, it was hepatitis vaccine. I mean, what are the odds that this baby's going to get hepatitis anyway? At a week old, and the baby, there were pictures, and the baby just immediately got this huge rash. So it was obviously from the vaccine. And then the body just swelled and swelled, and there was a rash all over the body, and then the baby died a couple weeks later. So it's clearly from the vaccine, but imagine being the parent and just watching your child go through this horrible thing.
Well, these vaccines, they're developing. I wrote an article on that I titled Readying Americans for Dangerous Mandatory Vaccinations. And I've always known that to some degree vaccines are dangerous, but I had no idea just how dangerous they are. And I found lots of good material quoting scientists and the studies that they conducted and the diseases they found from people being vaccinated with stuff. And it's everything from mild illnesses all the way up to ones that will kill you. And it just went on and on. Some of them were named so long that they're hard to pronounce or really understand exactly what it does to you. But the clear message from the stuff I had in my article was you absolutely want to stay away from vaccines of all kinds,
mm-hmm.
whether and it's one. Go ahead.
This autism epidemic, when I was young, I never heard of autism. I mean, there were no autistic children in our school. And now they have... Every classroom has special ed for, I mean, there's an epidemic of autism. The kids are just, we got vaccines, but we got them older and fewer and not nearly so toxic.
It's amazing that our government or any government would do this to its own people. But it's shocking that this is exactly the kind of thing. These are the things that go on. The idea that government is there to serve us and protect us and this best of all possible worlds they claim that made for us, the plain fact is the truth is the opposite. And it seems to get worse. The older I get, Ellen, the more horrible things seem to be going on. It just wasn't quite this way when I was a kid growing up. But and it doesn't matter who runs the government. I mean, we have a system in place, and who the names are, whether they represent Republicans or Democrats, the power structure is the same, and these people are there to serve it. So I think it was very clever to put Barack Obama in the White House, a friendly face, seems like a nice guy. Lots of people look at him, and, you know, how could a guy who says what he says and seemingly a good guy, the opposite of George Bush, the anti-George Bush, how could he not be there to be serving the interests of the people? Well, my goodness, he certainly is not there for that purpose.
Yeah. Well, one wonders how much influence he has. He's got all these advisors, and he had a sort of limited range of people he could pick for, say, head of the Treasury. People with, I don't know, and he gets blamed for what the Supreme Court does, but the Supreme Court is totally, there are no liberals on the Supreme Court, so... he really has no control over the Supreme Court. I mean, I tend to still, well, whatever, that's another issue. But to me, the frightening thing is if we have health insurance that's mandated on everyone, then they will say, well, now it's your duty to the group to stay healthy, and therefore if you're going to have to come in for tests every year, and if we see any signs, like let's say you have a suspicious mammogram, you're going to have to come in for mammogram. I've never had a mammogram. I'm fairly old, and I've never had a mammogram, and I never intend to have one. But I suspect they'll be mandating those things because they'll say, we don't want to have to pay your $150,000 for your cancer treatment, and so we want to make sure we catch your cancer at an early stage. So you're going to have to get these mammograms. And then those alone are bad for you. You know, you crush the breast, and that alone can stimulate something that might be in there. And then if there's, say it's something suspicious, they can't tell if there's a lump there or not, then they'll go in with a biopsy. Well, a biopsy is very dangerous because they cut right into the thing. So the whole point of a tumor is to wall off this dangerous thing to keep it from spreading. Well, if you cut right into it with a knife, then you allow it to spread. So what was not malignant can turn malignant, whereas if it was just a lump, it could be benign or the body could take care of it. So there's quite a bit of evidence for that, and I've actually written on that. So we no longer have the freedom to get sick. You don't have the freedom to risk getting this virus. Instead, you're forced to get this vaccine that supposedly will protect you from the virus. Your alternative, apparently, is to go to a FEMA camp. I mean, to go to prison if you don't accept this vaccine.
Well, there are 800 or more FEMA camps already set up, a lot of them on military bases, in every state in the country. And I've written a little bit about that. They are ready. Supposedly, those camps are there in case there's internal unrest. You know, angry people, they've lost their jobs, they've lost everything, and the government is doing nothing to help them. So people can only take so much pain for so long, and then they react. So these camps are in place, but they could be for any reason. As you say, you and I say, you'll never stick a needle in our arm. Well, off we go to a FEMA camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's quite frightening. The only good thing, it seems to me, is it's like in the banking situation, it's come to a head here. And as people have to deal with this whole medical issue, they might start thinking more about it. Maybe it's our opportunity to bring some natural remedies to light. Back on the issue of sweating, what I do is Bikram yoga, where you sweat profusely. It's yoga at 105 degrees, and you're supposed to sweat. And that's very cleansing and very healing and really rejuvenating. But there's also this Scientology detox. I don't want to promote the Scientologists, and there are many bad things to be said about that organization, but their detox system has had some remarkable effects. But people like from Chernobyl have gone in there and gotten healed of their radiation sickness. And what it does is it cooks out toxins. I know someone who... The first person that told me about this, he had been in a motorcycle accident, and he was in the hospital for an entire year. And during that time, they pumped him full of painkillers or narcotics. And so when he came out, he just felt like an old man. You know, he was just not himself. He was drugged to death. So he went through this Scientology detox, which is where they take niacin, which pushes the toxins out through the skin. You know, you get a niacin flush, you get real red. And at the same time, they go into the sauna and sweat. Well, first you exercise and work, get your heart rate up, and then you go into the sauna and sweat. And you do it for like 4 hours. I mean, you can come out and take a shower when you get too hot, and then you go back in. So they sweat and sweat and sweat, and they sweat all this stuff out. And he said, and you do it for several weeks. And he said when he came out of that, he felt like a child. He was just bouncing around. He felt wonderful. He never felt so good in his adult life.
Now, did I hear you right? Go into a sauna for 4 hours?
Well, you go in as, you know, you sit there for whatever, 15 minutes until you get too hot, and then you can come out and shower or go in the pool or whatever, and then you go back in.
So you do it in segments?
Yeah, well, you try to stay in there as long as you can, but it's the niacin that actually has the powerful effect, because the niacin pushes the toxins out of the skin, and the heat stimulates that. But many, the Indians have their sweat lodges. I heard of someone who had Bell's palsy, and half of his face had dropped, and there was no way to, you know, nothing was fixing it, and he went into an Indian sweat lodge, and he came out, and he was fixed. I mean, his face was fine. He'd cooked that thing out. That it was Bell's palsy is a virus, and he'd cooked it out. So, and that's the thing that we're suppressing, which with the number one drug, which is aspirin and aspirin-related drugs, are suppress fever. That's what they do. So you're suppressing the body's natural healing potential.
I have had a thing against drugs, Ellen, for as far back as I can remember. And I've been very lucky because I've had a couple of doctors who feel exactly the same way as I do. And they absolutely will not prescribe a drug unless they think that if they don't do it, there may be a greater risk than if they do it. But even then, maybe the conclusion is a wrong conclusion. But they don't know about these natural remedies.
Oh,
they don't teach this stuff in medical school.
Exactly. And if anybody hears about it, it's considered quackery or not substantiated. And doctors will say, well, that can't be true, or it would be in the medical journals. But the thing is, the medical journals don't – there are studies, but the medical journals don't allow those studies in because they contradict their advertisers, who are all those drug companies. I mean, the medical journals, you know.
Oh, very definitely.
The AMA journal is supported by advertising.
Oh, it's a hideous system. You know, we're talking about health issues now, but we could go right down the line, industry by industry. And it's been a long time, but I read a couple of books that scared me on the chemical proliferation that the big chemical companies have inflicted on us for many, many decades. Dow and Monsanto, when it was more of a chemical company than a biotech, not a biotech, but a GMO food producer. I mean, just horrible. I mean, just proliferating the landscape with this toxic stuff.
I've lived in four different third world countries, and Indigenous people are just healthier than we are. They just are. They have big jaws with plenty of room for their teeth because they eat closer to the ground. You know, they eat more natural. They eat lots of vegetables, et cetera, so their bones develop properly. They have wide hips, so they have easy deliveries. My deliveries were like the worst thing I ever did, one of the worst things. But, of course, it was worth it because of the wonderful children I got out of the deal. But anyway, in Guatemala, there was a woman who got a Nobel Peace Prize, and she was an Indian, and she wrote a book about her life in the indigenous society. Of course, they took no drugs, and they slept on the ground, not because they couldn't afford beds. I mean, of course, they couldn't afford beds, but they slept on the ground because they want to sleep on the ground, because there's an energy that comes up from the ground. It's called — she didn't say this, but I've read this elsewhere — it's called Schumann waves. This is why homeless people are often quite healthy. They sleep on the ground. They get that energy from the earth. They do a lot of exercise. They're out in the sun. The Indians, of course, ate totally naturally. But as she described her life when she was young, all they did was work. I mean, she said the most fun times were when she and her sisters would walk to the river, and they'd fill them up with water and fill up these big jugs with water and balance them on their heads, and they'd laugh and talk all the way back and stuff. So the thing is, we would call that work, but to them, because they were so healthy, because they were like animals, you know, they were right next to the ground, living in the energy of the earth, that what you would consider work when you don't feel so good actually is fun and feels good. It's the sort of the happy, like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, the happy munchkins who are enjoying their work.
But the munchkins, I think, had some overloads as oppressors. But
that's true. The 1890s weren't the best time.
the symbolism that maybe they were very happy in the book. But also, these people can do this to a pretty old age because they stay so healthy. So their aging process slows down.
Mm-hmm. there was some doctor in the 20s that said that if all the, if the entire materia medica were flushed into the ocean, it would be all the better for mankind and all the worse for the fishes. That people are rich people because we eat too much. We eat and drink. You know, we're stressed all the time, and stress causes a lot of disease. We don't get enough exercise. We're in front of all these electronic devices, and so actually, poor people are remarkably healthy. I lived in Africa too, and well, for one thing, the weather is so good that you don't really need a house. I mean, all you need is a little. They lived in those shanties that look so impoverished, but it's really fine. It's like just a little. It'd be like living in a tent in a wonderful. You'd like going on vacation and camping out. You feel just fine out there. And then they have their little plot of vegetables right next to the little hut. And so they get their green vegetables. Maybe there's a chicken or two running around. They get a few eggs or something. And I asked somebody who I had a friend who was a native African, and I said, "Do you eat meat?" And she said, "Yeah, we eat meat." She said, "Once a week, we go out and we eat meat, and it's a night out, and that's all they eat is meat that one particular night." So they actually have a very, very healthy diet and a very healthy lifestyle where they do a lot of walking.
We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour, final segment with Ellen Brown. Ellen, I think so often it comes down to the simple and natural is the best way of things, and if we can find a way to stay healthy, stay stress-free as much as possible, my goodness, there's no way to put a price on that, but a few minutes left. Your final thoughts on how to do it right and avoid doing what's wrong.
Well, another thing you don't see in third world countries is that there's an alarming number of overweight people walking around in the U.S. I mean, there's just clearly something wrong with our lifestyle. We're not getting nutrients out of our food, and so there's a craving for food. People don't know why. They just aren't satisfied, and they keep eating and eating and eating. It's because of bioengineered foods and the fact that the life has been eliminated from our foods. It's been eliminated from our earth, the dirt that creates the food. So we need to go back to where the crops are grown. And I can't remember the word.
Organic.
Yeah. Anyway, so that they grow the crops next to each other in a certain way, so that they kind of feed each other nutrients. Anyway, they're much more efficient ways to grow food.
Well, biodiversity. Biodiversity.
I was thinking bioengineering, but that's not it. Anyway, and I heard your advertisers talking about things to stockpile in case of a disaster. I would stockpile some colloidal silver. One remedy, I hesitate to mention this. I wrote a whole book on arthritis cures, and in one little paragraph, I mentioned urine therapy. And so the book was reviewed in the New York Times, and the one thing they focused right on was this urine therapy. I don't know how they even found that in there, but drinking your own urine is actually very therapeutic. It's done in India, and it's how Gandhi drank his urine every morning, and that's what he attributed his great health to. Of course, you probably wouldn't do it. I mean, I don't do it because you don't need to do it in this environment. But there's certain remedies that they can't take away from us. Colloidal silver, you can make yourself. You can make it with electrodes and a piece of silver. Of course, it's not going to be as good. I mean, the products, the best products, the ones in suspension and so forth, you probably have to get manufactured somewhere. But the best remedies are the simplest, and they can't take them away from us. And, in fact, in some ways, we'd be better off if we were poorer so that we couldn't eat so much and couldn't live this very luxurious lifestyle. I've heard that during the Depression, life was good in some ways because people had time to sit around and talk and play games. And, you know, they really they socialized. As long as you had the basics, if you had enough to eat and a roof over your head, life could be good. It was much slower. It's the stresses of modern life that drive us all nuts. I mean, look at all these. Look at Michael Jackson. I mean, how happy was he in his last years? And he had everything. Or Farrah Fawcett, I'm going to look this up, but I'm sure she got hit with all the chemotherapy and radiation that modern medicine had to offer. It's the same with Jackie Kennedy. She was all right until they hit her with huge doses of chemotherapy, I guess. I can't remember exactly now. But anyway, our cancer treatments could, there's a lot of evidence that it's the cancer treatments that actually kill the cancer patient.
That is shocking stuff to hear, and it's important to think about. Gee, I hope you'll write an article on some of what we talked about today, Ellen. My goodness, then we can come back and just have another chapter two of the same program. I mean, this is important stuff.
Yeah. I'll have to pull up I've done a lot of writing on this area, and I have to admit because I'm so focused on banking lately that the details
are
kind of stuck my...
We're out of time. Oh, it breaks my heart. I wish we could keep going. Oh, we'll come back and do it again, but we have to leave now. Please join us. Oh, it's Friday. Join us again Monday. Have a good weekend.